Hi everyone, it's Fahan, and you're listening to the Nisa Invest Tea Talk podcast, a podcast where we get together and we answer some questions relating to all things personal finance, whether it's to do with pensions, budgeting, investing, all of that good stuff. I'm your host, Fahan. I'm so glad you've joined me so that we can get started. So the first question is asking more detail about ISAs and Islamic investments. I don't fully grasp the concepts. So this is great because it's asking about ISAs and then it's asking about Islamic investments. So we can take the two of them in turn. Just as a cliff note again, ISAs are the way that you can invest in the UK to either save up for a home or for your retirement, or also for just as an investment portfolio that is not subject to tax, such as capital gains tax or dividend income tax. And then Islamic investments. So how is it that we can acquire, what I love to talk about is like an index fund that is halal. How can we buy those so that we're able to, you know, invest and then get on with our lives and have that just carry on and invest for the long term. Now, the simplest way to think about it is to take a step back and ask yourself, so what is it that I'm doing when I'm looking for an investment? What you're effectively saying is that I have one type of asset, which is cash, and you're looking to put that into work into another type of asset. You're looking to acquire either stocks and shares, or you're looking to acquire property, commodities, and even precious metals. You can count them as commodities like gold, etc. These are all other ways that people are able to store their wealth so that instead of keeping it as cash, which can be or cannot be an attractive investment. Now, in terms of how Islamic investments work, maybe we can first talk about, so if the point that we're trying to get to is how do I buy a halal index fund, we can first talk about what an index fund is to begin with. And an index fund is effectively a basket of stocks and shares. So I mentioned stocks and shares as a type of asset class. They effectively represent a share, a part ownership in a company. So a lot of the, we actually know exactly what these companies are valued at because they're the largest companies in the world. They're called such because they are publicly listed, meaning that investors worldwide can buy ownership in those companies by going onto the stock market and buying units of shares. And so if we Apple, the most valuable company in the world, you can buy a stock of Apple. And that means that you are one of its shareholders and you part own Apple as a company. Now, that would imply that what you're doing is single stock investing. You're saying, I want to own that particular company, so I'm going to buy a share in that company. And why is it that perhaps that might not be the way that you might want to go? Is that, yes, when you own a company, what you're doing is that you are saying that whatever happens to that company, either the value of it grows, and so does the shares that you own, or something happens and the value of it collapses, or the company just goes bust. And then if you are an equity shareholder, meaning that you own part of that company, you bear the risk of either all of the upside of any growth that happens across the lifetime of the company, or any of its downturns too, which is what investments are. They appreciate and depreciate over time. Now, you might be someone that effectively just wants to put their money to work. Not particularly fussed about what exactly happens to that company. You're not trying to look for the one that's going to give me 50% returns, and you're not someone who might spend all their time reading all sorts of reports to be able to spot which ones instead you should be selling, because there are significant risks ahead for it. So that's where the index fund comes in. The index fund, I think, is an amazing invention. Effectively, an index is something that exists. Indices, they're companies that exist that create these indices. And an index is a representation of a basket of stocks. And so we have indices that represent entire economies. So if I talk about the FTSE 100, that's the index that represents the 100 largest companies in the UK. And that means the 100 companies that are valued as the biggest, and which are trading on the London Stock Exchange. You've got those for all, like all major markets have indices. In the US, it's you've got the S&P 500, which is an index, and also the Dow Jones, and several others. And what the index fund instead represents is that it allows people to choose to buy a selection of stocks that mimics the index that exists. So what you're saying is that I want to put my money in the UK market. So you effectively want to put your money in a fund that represents and tracks the what the FTSE 100 is doing. That means that what you've bought is a FTSE 100 index tracker fund. And that means that if the market is up 2%, your stocks are up 2%. Your portfolio is up 2%. You're not expecting huge returns. You're not expecting huge downturns. You're just effectively expecting to get a return of what the general economy is doing, which, you know, it could have huge returns. It could have huge downturns. But if I would, a really good way of thinking about it is just generally, you want to participate in the economy, and you can, as opposed to having your cash sit there. And so that's what you've done. You've decided to buy an index fund that tracks the FTSE 100. And so whatever it is that the UK market is doing, that's what you can, that's the return that you can expect from your basket of stocks. Now, that is when the concept of wanting to make sure that your investment is halal comes in. Because if your simple criteria is that I want to invest in a broad market fund that represents the wider market, you know that there are certain companies that invest in things that you, that don't align with your values as Muslims, that it wouldn't make sense to own. And so there are index funds that exist that are effectively halal index funds. And so they tell you which index that they're tracking, and they are tracking an index that has been created that represents a basket of stocks that include the criteria of them being halal. So a global, and you can look these up. You can actually look up the name of the actual index. But that is almost trying to understand it at its effective basic level. So what we're saying is that as a long-term investor, we're interested in owning broad-based market index funds. And as someone, as a Muslim looking to invest in making sure that their and ensuring that their investments are halal, we're only interested in those index funds that also have the added criteria of being halal. So then the next question comes in, which is, where is it that I can purchase these funds? And that also have the added criteria that is halal, but in general, where is it that someone living in the UK goes starts their investment journey? So if we stick to stocks and shares, where is it that we can buy our halal index fund? The first step would be to open an ISA. Specifically, the type of ISA you want is a stocks and shares ISA. Now, there are many providers that allow people to open up ISAs. And if you're after a particular index, you can literally search on the provider's website to see if they have that fund that you're looking for. Now, I thought about this question, and I also wanted to go a bit further and say that maybe you don't actually want to invest in the actual index, but you want to generally invest in a what is called a robo with a robo advisor, which is someone who tells you what the criteria in terms of risk level of a fund is, and tells you what percentage of the different asset classes that fund represents. And they're typically called very aggressive, aggressive, not so aggressive. And depending on where you are in your, usually is how much time you can afford to be in the market, that is one of the indicators of your risk level. And so if you're young, you might go for a more, you'd own more stocks. If you're older, you'd balance your portfolio to be focused on some of those assets that perhaps are not as volatile with like equities. And so the question then is, if that's the route that I want to take, now I, rather than just buying a straight index fund and then doing it, it is type of doing it yourself, but in reality, you're just effectively buying into the market. So you could have just an index fund and then a couple of other indices that represent other asset classes. But if you wanted to just do it based off of your risk level and have like a fund that tells you exactly how much you're investing, it becomes a bit trickier if you're Muslim, because maybe you might be asking, does that actually exist for us? One investment platform that does it like this is Wahid Invest. So that when, if you're familiar with it, that's the way that you're able to invest on their platform. You can just indicate your risk level, and then they tell you exactly what type of percentage ownership of the various asset classes you have. If instead you wanted to just buy the asset class yourself and buy, for instance, just a halal index fund, you could do that too. And then you would go on to perhaps maybe another platform that you know has the halal index fund that you're after. And examples of those are like AJ Bell, Hargreaves Lansdown, they have them. And when you do go on these platforms, whether it's Wahid Invest, whether it's Hargreaves Lansdown, whether it's AJ Bell, what you're looking to do is open your individual savings account, your ISA, and specifically a stocks and shares ISA. And the reason you want to do that is simply because anyone in the UK, anyone over the age of 18, is able to invest in each tax year up to £20,000 tax-free. And so you can think about your investing journey as you, in many ways, is you choosing the provider that has the funds that you're after, and then choosing to open an ISA with them. And then that's when you put your money in as cash, and you move your money into the various funds or into the robo advisor platform that you based on just your risk level that you choose. So that's going into it with more detail about exactly what ISIS and Islamic investments are. The idea of starting to invest is great, because another caveat to think about is, am I ready to invest? So getting yourself to the point that you can invest is a great financial goal to have, because when you're investing, you want to be in the market and you want to stay in the market for as long as possible, and not have to unnecessarily interrupt compound interest. Now, to do that, you want to, first of all, make sure that you're debt-free. Second of all, you want to make sure that you have started to invest in a pension, because that's often the best place to start investing. And then thirdly, you want to make sure that you've got an emergency fund. So your emergency fund effectively acts as your margin of safety, which is a term that investors use. If the larger your margin of safety, the more you can withstand what's happening in the market. And so knowing what it is to invest and getting yourself to that point to be able to do so regularly and for the long term is like absolutely brilliant. And I would say that's effectively the end of the story. That's where it ends in terms of what ISIS are, what does a halal index fund mean, where can I buy one, and when is it that I'm ready to invest. So that's us going into detail about ISIS and Islamic investments. I've got the second question here. So second question for this week is, are there countries you wouldn't recommend buying properties from? Thank you for educating us. Thank you. So this is an interesting question, because when it comes to property, the fact is that no investment of the sort is both something that is an incredibly personal decision to make, but is also one that we want to approach in as rational a way as possible. Because on the one hand, we're talking about investing in property, and on the other hand, we're talking about buying your home. And so it's very easy to conflate the two, because that's kind of a concept that I feel like once I grasped the simple fact that in reality, humans, we're not rational, we're not wired to make every decision in a purely in a way that is like completely devoid of emotion. And so realizing that a good outcome for you might very well be meaning something completely different for someone else. Once I realized that, I think that was really big for me, because ultimately you're the one that has to live with those decisions, and quite physically live in the house that you own or own the investment that you buy. Whichever way you think about it, ultimately we can't assume that what works for someone works for someone else. So when I think about this question, are there countries that I wouldn't recommend buying properties from? A simple question like that could mean something completely different to someone else. But if, it can also be valid, but if international real estate is something that you're interested in, that is something that I feel like everybody can have a view on and opinion on and expertise in. And so knowledge is power in these cases. And I feel like nobody would hesitate to go in incredible amount of detail about their views of their particular real estate market that they live in. If I think about the number of conversations that I've had that unwittingly veer into the topic of real estate, they're countless. And so I would just do exactly what you did, which was put that question out there, take in people's views, and remember that actually what works for someone else might not work for you, because it's ultimately we're the ones that need to live with that decision, which is which is kind of just part of making decisions as a whole, right? We have our own frame of reference of what we think is a good outcome for ourselves, and that is not an entirely rational assessment by any means. Thanks so much for that question. Question asks more about financial literacy, halal ways of spending and saving. And yes, when it comes to financial literacy, I feel like we have to be comfortable with like all the verbs that come to that relate to what we do with money. And here we've got asking about ways to spend and save. And I feel that with any concept, the answer is super simple. Like the simplest rules are always like the ones that get passed down generation to generation, and it's the ones that we would say to someone if they ever asked for advice. Now, for me, when it comes to financial literacy, I feel like it has to almost do with how is it that as individuals we're able to deal with things that are uncertain, and how comfortable we are with uncertainty, dealing with the unknown, if you will. So when I was getting to grips with financial literacy, something that was hugely motivating was the thought that I just have to set it and then I can forget it. Because a lot of the time, like, maybe I spent several hours trying to understand exactly how can I make sure that I'm making the most of my employer's pension plan. But that is like one thought that you have the very first time you join that company. And then after that, you set it and you can forget about it. It's the same also with negotiating a SIM-only deal with your mobile phone provider. You do that and you have comfort in the knowledge that you're not going to have to do that for maybe another year, because you're quite happy with the deal that you got. And so the mantra that you just have to deal with it and then you can forget about it, a lot of the things are sometimes quite automated, I feel is it can be incredibly motivating to try to get to grips with financial literacy. Something that is also quite similar, and I feel like it has to also deal with, have to do with how it is that we deal with uncertainty. And I'm interested to know how much you agree with this, but the idea that if you ever feel like you need help with something, you should give help to someone else on another thing. So if you feel like you need something, that's probably the best time for you to give something as well. And the reason I say that is because, and you also don't need to be hugely an expert at any one particular thing to give honest counsel to someone else. But if you're like 2 years ahead of anyone in their life journey, and you look behind you and you look at that person and you think, I could help them out by giving them advice on any one thing. So if you've just started your graduate job and you're in it for like a year, you're probably the best person there to advise someone who's looking for a graduate job. Or similarly, if you are in your job for a year, asking people who are 2 to 3 years ahead of you are probably the best people to ask about what sort of things they've thought about when it comes to either really anything, really. And so another thing that I feel that happens when you give advice to someone else is you kind of put yourself into their shoes, and you remember vividly how it is that you felt when you were at that stage, and that you got over it and you couldn't believe how easy it is, that it gives you a lot more certainty. Again, it helps you deal with the vagueness, and it gives you you become incredibly sure that whatever it is that you're dealing with next, you're going to figure it out anyway, and that period of uncertainty is just incredibly transient and that you'll get over it. And so getting, like, practicing that muscle of how you deal with uncertainty, I feel like helps a lot, not just with your finances, but in other fields, and reminding yourself that you've dealt with much harder things in your life is like a sure way for you to be like, okay, this is going to be easy. And the very last one, I would say is, know that every penny that you have has a name to it already, meaning the idea that budgeting is effectively simply telling your money where to go. I like that. You know, you're just telling it where to go instead of wondering where it went. So having a budget is really critical. I feel like I'm kind of influenced by a positive feeling when it comes to budgets, because budget means, it really just means it gives you permission to spend. It means that you are able to work towards your goal, knowing that you've thought through the steps of how to get there. And so when it comes to finding ways to save better and spend better, starting off with having a balanced budget is critical. And every month as you go by, as like the years go by, if the only marker that I have in my mind is the budget working, that means, oh, is my emergency fund intact? How do I feel about my savings rate, meaning the amount of money that I'm putting into my investments every month? Or how am I living within my means? Are my living expenses, you know, the expenses that we have just to keep the lights on, are they as low as they can be? Is there a bill somewhere that perhaps needs to be renegotiated? Am I out of plan in any one of the line items of my budget that means that I can just switch provider? So using the budget as a signal to where it is that you should be looking is incredibly useful, and it allows you to just stay grounded in knowing that, you know, you're not going to like pick the solution out of thin air. It's really just about having a plan in front of you, and you end up being the person that remains having the agency, right? It's all about just having agency over your present rather than trying to control the future, which is not in our hands. I did want to mention, when I was going through the investing question, if you did want to learn more about it, I had a book to recommend, which is called Halal Investing for Beginners. I actually have a copy here. So the brothers have a really useful blog called Islamic Finance Guru that I've been following for a while. And this year they came out with a book. Now, I haven't finished reading it, but I am reading it at the moment. So if you did want to read it as well, that's the name of it. I'll probably be talking about it more, especially if I pick out some things that we can that I feel are relevant, I'm sure. So I didn't get that at while we were talking about the investing question, but that was another thing I wanted to leave you with. So that was it for this week's episode. Thanks a lot for joining me. My name is Fahan. You're listening to the Nisa Invest Tea Talk podcast. I wish you a great start to your weekend, and see you next Jummah. Bye for now.